Welcome back to Arts About, everybody.
Show about art that's a work of art in itself, and Sally inhabits some strange sort of space-time continuum.
Indeed,
that no one
does.
Can quite put their finger on.
Yeah, that's right. We could be coming from you to you from any time at all.
Yeah, parallel universe.
Yes, we've had some strange experiences in here over the last couple of weeks. Anyway, we are still here and we are still bringing you Arts About, which also is brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Gallery and Sculpture Park and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. Yeah, I'm Sally Bailey and you're listening to Arts About once more. Good morning, John Baird. What do you have for us this week?
You remember I was talking about the Leonardo da Vinci drawing that was doubted?
Yes.
Well, I've been doing a little bit of research on all of this and I've dug up an amazing amount of skullduggery and mischief and all sorts of wonderful stuff.
Actually. How exciting. I was just thinking about that the other day and wondering whether or not any more information had come to light. Oh, that's thrilling that we're going to hear about that. That's fantastic. We have a big show today. We have friend of the show, Bridget Thomas, joining us in the studio this morning. She's one of three artists exhibiting at SALT in Queenscliff in an exhibition called Summer by the Sea, and that opens next week. We've also got Matt Mackay, and he's a local surfer and a photographer who's been documenting the local coastline for a long time with his camera, and he's just produced a beautiful calendar for next year that would make a fantastic gift for Christmas. He's going to come in and we might get to see one of them for ourselves. I think Cliff should come in. We're expecting him in, as usual. So, but before we do anything, let's hear from our first guest, Bridget Thomas. She's in the studio hot seat, and she's looking gorgeous as always. Good morning, Bridget.
Morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
G'day, Bridgie.
Now, apparently, Bridget, you would have preferred to have been born in 1761 because I understand that you can imagine yourself as a naturalist travelling the coastline of Australia and documenting everything. Is that really a fantasy of yours?
I would have loved to because, I love being on boats, but it just you'd experience things firsthand and just to document things and to actually like have to look at something really, really carefully and really, really examine something and paint it. And, I think it would have been
1761 is pretty early.
Yeah, it would have been.
But the people who were around not long after that were using a lot of the techniques that you use. You know, they used engraving plates rather than etching plates, but engraving plates. And the main reason being that if they simply made drawings, the drawings would get wet and would decay. So they made work onto plates so that they were safe at sea. Joseph Solander and those people, they're all very good at what they did.
And they were colour-coded by number, so when they got back to England, the engravers could put the right colours on it. Yeah.
Do you do that, Bridget? Do you colour-code things by number? When you?
I paint by numbers.
Well, we're very glad that you didn't get born in 1961. And for some of us out there...
1761.
Did I say? 1961. Yeah. I was born in 1961. Bridget's been doing the most wondrous watercolour glimpses of sea creatures and sailing boats, and the peninsula wouldn't be the same without them. You've been doing for the last few years an exhibition that opens around about this time over at SALT, haven't you?
Yeah, this is a pre-Christmas one. I think it opens this Friday. The 18th is 18th of December over at SALT, and it's on for 2 weeks, so the opening date is midweek Christmas, New Year.
And you're doing an artist day, aren't you? Isn't there you come down and meet the artist?
Yeah, the 27th of December, which is...
Just after Christmas.
Yeah,
midweek. Now, tell us about who are the other artists that are involved in the exhibition as well as you?
Sue Anderson, who I have been showing with every year, and Hugo Shaw, who's another artist that obviously has some Queenscliff scenes and things like that.
I haven't seen Hugo Shaw before, but Sue Anderson I'm familiar with, and I like her pictures.
There's a nice... I think they're diverse, and they all sort of complement one another, the three different styles.
Yeah. Well, the three of you paint images of things that are around our locality, aren't they? They're all either the Bellarine Peninsula or the our local peninsula, or what's out on the water.
Yeah.
Or in the water, I should say, too. One of the things, I was looking at your beautiful invitation, and it's got a few prints on it of your work, Bridget, and there's this beautiful sense, in fact, there's one of them of the birds that I really like that looks to me like it's almost like a jigsaw puzzle with the interlocking pieces. And I know we talked about this before, but I was very interested to know, do you start in one corner? Do you start with a piece and see, how it all fits together first? Do you make a jigsaw puzzle, or do you
Sometimes I'll have a rough idea of how it is, but it is as each piece goes in, or not each piece, but each time I draw something, there'll be a negative space, and that's what will fill that space, that in that particular one, that bird or something. And that one's from John's block up in the Mallee, so there's a lot of bird life up there. Not a lot of fish. We do catch them, but the bird life is prolific.
Mm.
So I really enjoyed doing that. Something really different that I wouldn't have done certainly down on the peninsula, because I suppose I'm not exposed to that many sort of birds of prey and things up as we are up
there. Do you draw the birds on the wing, so to speak?
A lot of them were, and then I used references for a bit more detail, because I'm a sucker for detail.
Right.
So some of them are just, quite...
Unlike the old Audubon birds in America, where he would shoot them and then put a wire through them to put them in a pose and then
make
the drawing. Yeah.
Well, there could be some of those in that one.
I had a rather spectacular occurrence on the weekend, earlier in the weekend, where I pulled up right next to, it wasn't an eagle, but it was a very large bird of prey. So it was probably
a kestrel.
No, yeah. It was bigger than a... Anyway, it was a dark bird, and it just stood there and looked at me, and I was probably 4 or 5 feet away, and then it took off, and it had another smaller bird in its talons. Mm. It was quite a moment, actually. They're very exciting creatures, aren't they?
They're beautiful, yeah.
Now, we haven't really described your work terribly. Bridget does these really, really beautiful watercolours that describe sea life. There's seaweeds, there's fish, there's crabs.
Ships, don't forget the ships.
Yes, and then of course there's ships and boats as well as the birds in the sea.
Bridget gives particularly good ship, I think.
Yes, she does.
Compliment.
Yeah, there's some beautiful ones also on this invitation here. And it's not only sailing ships, is it?
No, I love the marine traffic. Mm. There's ships on the, the big ones, get out there and in awe of them.
Would it have been a fantasy of yours to have been a lighthouse keeper too, perhaps?
Oh, definitely, definitely.
I can imagine.
Oh, there's another story to that one.
We've
got a Deal Island take volunteers for the lighthouse, or for the caretaking for the Deal Island lighthouse and the weather reports and things, and John and I have got that for 3 months over summer in the next 2 years.
Great.
Really?
Yeah.
Lucky
you. That's
take your crayfish bibs.
Crayfish bibs and abalone,
Yeah.
And my paints.
And your paints, of course. Tell me, do you paint when you're out on the water?
I do, and that's a lot of those little ships will be just thumbnail ones, which is why they're sort of small and quite sketchy, and not a lot of detail, and lots of other little boats, yeah.
And how long have you been painting down on the Mornington Peninsula?
We've lived here since 1991, but my parents lived here in the 80s, so from the 80s, 82, I think, So I've been down here
for quite a while. I suspect that there's a lot of your work in houses around on the Mornington Peninsula, given that you've been doing it for so long and given that you are so prolific. Tell me, how can people see your work? Obviously, there's this exhibition over at Salt in Queenscliff over this month. But do you exhibit elsewhere?
I do. There's a few local shows, and in Sorrento, Gallery Sorrento, I'll have a few pieces, and I'm hoping to get another show there towards the end of summer. So I'll go back home and head down again.
Fantastic. Well, make sure you let us know.
Yes.
The exhibition Summer by the Sea is on at Salt Contemporary Art Gallery, which is in Hess Street in Queenscliff. It runs from the 18th of December through to the 31st, and then there's, of course, the special open day where you can get along and meet Bridget and presumably Sue and Hugo as well.
Yeah, fun day.
The gallery. That's at 2:30 on December the 27th. That's a Sunday. Thanks so much for coming into Arts About today, Bridget Thomas.
Great to see you all.
Good luck with the exhibition.
Thanks,
Bridgie.
The season for the Peninsula Summer Music Festival is upon us once again, and we are thrilled to have the artistic director and also star of a couple of the performances, Julia Fredersdorf, on the phone with us today to whet your taste buds with a little information about the program coming up. Good morning, Julia, and welcome once again to Arts About.
Good morning, Sally.
Thanks so much for answering the phone and being there today.
That's okay.
Now, it's the 9th festival this time.
It is, yeah. We're really excited to have got this far with it. When we started, we had 6 concerts, and it's just grown from there, and it's been adapting a little bit around people's tastes and what people want to hear when they're on holiday and all that kind of thing. So it's changed, but yeah, we're really thrilled to have got to 9 years. Next year's the big 10.
I know, incredible. It's really become a very well-entrenched regular on our peninsula agenda now. For any of our listeners out there who, if you don't know what the Peninsula Summer Music Festival is, or you have perhaps been living under a rock for the last 9 years, Julia, can you describe a little bit to our listeners what it is? What's the Summer Music Festival and how did it come into being?
Okay, so I'll start with how it came into being, because that explains the former question as well. I am a musician myself, and I used to live overseas, and as an expat, I often would come back for Christmas to see the family, and often I wasn't playing at that time of year, because it's actually quite a fairly quiet time of year for the arts. And my parents lived in Flinders, and I was around there. In fact, I was at Montalto Vineyard thinking, oh, these are all such fabulous venues, and everybody's down here on the peninsula at this time of year, as in January. And I suddenly thought, wow, there's an opportunity here. I think people love going to the beach, but, you know, there are other things they can do, like listen to music. so that was how it came about. And the program is probably about 70% classical music, which is my background, with a focus on early music. Again, that's my background. Only a couple of the concerts are early music concerts. The rest of them are varied, different repertoire. And then we have a few jazz gigs as well, and we've got some world music, Indian music, Middle Eastern music, lots of different stuff, really.
And look, it is amazing, and the program has broadened and has become quite exceptional. It runs between the 1st and the 10th of January. And the other thing that I think is rather spectacular about it is the venues that that all of these performances are taking place in, because it's a mixture of wineries and churches and outdoors, and as well as providing this extraordinary plethora of music, it's providing a great excuse to get out and see some of the venues on the Mornington Peninsula that perhaps people haven't visited before.
That's right. Yeah, well, there's quite a few wineries involved. We have regular events at Moorooduck Estate, at Port Phillip Estate, and Montalto, and Hummingbird, which is actually not a winery, but it's a hotel and a retreat. And we also have on board this year, we have LG Park, which is a wonderful place. It's they have this big, it's, I guess you would have to call it a barn.
And a sculpture garden.
But with the most magnificent art collection and this beautiful grounds. And so, yeah, we're holding the garden party there. What else? We've got, we're doing a few concerts in a new venue, which is Shoreham Catholic Church, mm-hmm. Which is it's actually a modern church, but it's perched up on the hill at Shoreham and has the most magnificent view. So that'll be lovely. And also the Briars. We have a really exciting concert going on there. Napoleon's guitar is actually housed at the Briars, the collection. They have a huge Napoleon collection out there.
Yeah, what did you say, his guitar?
Yes, it belonged to him. It was left, I think he was travelling and he left it to the first people who owned the Briars, mm-hmm. before they came out to Australia, and he was visiting them, and their daughter played the guitar, and he left it with her. So it's actually his guitar, and but that's not what's going to be played. It'll just be on display. But yeah, that's really exciting. So we've got a concert representing that music of that era, basically.
Incredible. So there's over the 10 days, there's more than 10 events, actually, aren't there?
That's right. I think there's probably almost 20 events, actually, 16 or 17 or something like that, yeah.
Tell us a few of the highlights.
Well, there's a few international artists that I'm really excited about. We have a Maltese pianist called Gabby Sultana, who's doing a really amazing program. It's a quite a varied program with some core repertoire like Beethoven and Debussy. And then there's also going to be the Macrocosmos of George Crumb, which is the most incredible piece to watch. It's very theatrical, and she's a very theatrical player, actually. One of the things I've been saying to people is that, of all the music that you should not listen to a recording of, that's one piece, and she is one player, because she's just amazing to watch. So I really recommend that one. Mm. And I also have this is really special for me, I have my teacher coming out. So this is my Italian teacher. I went over to study in Europe when I was 23, and he was my teacher for 3 years, and he's never been to Australia, so he's coming out to for two reasons. One is to direct the academy that we're running, which is an opportunity for young musicians who are interested in historical performance practice, and we're doing a program of Concerti Grossi by composers such as Corelli and Handel. Mm-hmm. That's an outdoor concert, and he's directing that, and he's going to be mentoring everybody and teaching us all about style and all that kind of thing. And then there's also a concert with just he and I, and he and me, I should say, and Donald Nicholson playing harpsichord, and his wife, who's a bassoonist, but she's playing the early form of bassoon, which is called the dulcian, which is really an interesting instrument. So they're really
exciting.
What's his
name? We didn't get his name.
His name is Enrico Gatti. Sorry, I didn't mention that.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, Enrico Gatti, and her name's Elena Bianchi.
And you mentioned an academy. What's the academy?
Well, the academy, again, this was an idea that came out of my experience in Europe. Most of the summer festivals on which our festival is based, that style, have an educational component, which is often in the form of a week-long intensive course where people will study with somebody that maybe is playing in the festival itself and that they wouldn't normally have access to. So in this case, obviously, it's a violinist. He is a teacher in the conservatorium in The Hague and also in Milan. He's based in Italy. And a lot of people who are young, or at least, I mean, there are some young people, there are some professionals who are coming to basically to profit from his wisdom, shall we say. And it's a really wonderful opportunity to do so. And we just love putting that kind of thing on, because the concerts are always so fabulous. Everybody's really enthusiastic, and you know, having spent a week together, there's a really special atmosphere between the players, and yeah, so that's a real highlight. And we're doing that every second year at the moment.
Sensational. Well, it is a remarkable program. I've had a look at it. You have a really brilliant website so that people can have a look and read a little bit about each of the artists. The festival, the Peninsula Summer Festival, Music Festival, runs between the 1st and the 10th of January. They have a website, which is www.peninsulafestival.com.au. Is it, Julia?
That's right. That's correct.
Fantastic. You should have a look at it. It is really worth getting in there and having a look and trying and getting yourself some tickets, and do it soon, because it sells out. They're small-ish venues and there's a great demand, and you might find somewhere with a beautiful lunch. And what better thing would it be to do, to listen to some exquisite world-renowned music and have a beautiful afternoon in a gorgeous location. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Julia Freydersdorf. Good luck with the festival, and thank you very much for organising it, because the Mornington Peninsula is really much richer for it.
Oh, thank you very much, Billy.
Thanks, Julia. Oh, and now listen, we're going to go out with a track that you have sent me. It's Greensleeves. Can you just quickly give me a little description of that?
Yeah, sure. This is a piece that was included in Latitude 37, which is my group's latest release, CD release, which was released a couple of months ago. And it's English, quintessential English music with two different variations on the Greensleeves theme superimposed upon each other, and the singer is singing over the top. It's very ethereal and gorgeous.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Julia Freydersdorf.
Okay.
Bye. Matt Mackay is a photographer based in Sorrento. He's also a surfer with a strong connection to the ocean, and his photography reflects that. His website, Inner Light Photography, is populated by an amazing array of very familiar images of the local coastline. And he's just created a rather wonderful calendar for next year from some of those amazing images. He's now sitting in the studio opposite me this morning. Good morning, Matt Mackay. Thanks for coming into Arts About.
Morning, Sally. Morning, John.
Morning, Matt.
Matt, have you been taking photographs down here on the Mornington Peninsula for a long time?
Yes, I have, actually. It's been probably 20 plus years. But I was also coming down here when I was a kid. So, you know, I always had a connection to the coast down here. And, you know, when I took up surfing in my teens, that was pretty much it. I had to live near the coast after that. Mm-hmm. And the kind of photography part of that, that's why I've gravitated more to the, you know, landscape, nature-based photography, because that's where I want to spend most of my time.
Mm. There's an endless source of extraordinary images down here, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. Like, this coast, it's just amazing. The diversity and just the, you know, and the way it changes all the time with the different times of the year, you know, different lighting, you know, in autumn, and then, you know, to see the different seasons as well.
And, and the different tides, of course.
The different tides, of course, yeah. Like, well, being a surfer, my life revolves around the tides. And, you know, that was kind of one of the, you know, like what inspired me to include a tide guide in the calendar.
Yeah, because I was going to get to that. The calendar has on it tides at the local heads, at Port Phillip Heads. And, of course, that affects all the conditions down on the bay for whether or not it's for swimming, but particularly, of course, for surfing. Yeah. And I thought that was a really nice touch, because it really is very important to anybody down here what the tides are doing. And so often people do get it wrong. We have all these events and so on that are timed for the tides, and sometimes they're not quite there. Well, surfers would love this, wouldn't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of people that live on the peninsula live here because of the coast, you know, to be near the water, and they have, like, you know, it's fishermen, divers, surfers, and they all want to know what the tide is.
I've got one of your calendars on the wall in my studio, Matt, and I like looking at the tide chart just to know what the tide's doing without having to go down there and deal with it.
I like
knowing what the tide's doing. It kind of helps me get through the day in many ways.
Yeah.
A day, Matt, that will often involve me going down to one of the ocean beaches down there, and there's your car. So you seem to spend a great deal of time either surfing or presumably going up and down those beaches and photographing things. But your car is ubiquitous down there.
Yes. Well, I mean, I just like going down there. Even if there's no surf, I'll take the camera, and I might not necessarily get any pics on that particular day, just with the lighting and everything like that. But you always see things like that will kind of make you think, oh, well, you know, I'll come back at a certain time and a certain tide.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing. And, you know that I'll get the shot then, and different time of the year when the light might hit those particular, you know, section of the coast and the rocks and things like that. You know, I've got a shot actually at home which I took of a moon. The full moon was like setting through this sort of rock arch, but that would only happen, the moon would only be in that position at, say, one month a year.
Yes.
And to get the conditions where it's clear and everything like that, it's, people don't realise that. They just sort of like think, oh, I can go out and take a photo. There's a lot of elements that have to come together.
Absolutely. I would think that there would be just an infinite number of variables. You know, I could imagine that you could actually set up a tripod in a position and not move the camera, and then just wait and take photographs at different times of the day, at different times of the tide, at different times of the year, in different weather conditions. I mean,
it would
just vary so much, as with the light and, yeah.
Well, it just changed, like it, you know, the landscape changes, or the seascapes especially, change, you know, almost daily.
Mm.
You go to a spot and, you know, there might be a whole, like the cattle jetty shot I've taken, one day there might be a huge pile of driftwood that's washed up there and just accumulated, and sort of makes it, you know, a bit more of a unique shot, having all that in the foreground with the old cattle jetty. And then you might go back a few days later and it's all just covered in sand because of the tide and the swell. And
Now, did you study photography?
I did, yeah. Well, I did a little course at Swinburne many years ago, but that was more, I was just interested in it.
Yep.
And it was more of a hobby then. But, you know, over time, you know, photography, it's an evolving process and you're always, like, trying to take different shots or just improve techniques and things like that. So,
there's something of your lifestyle that ekes into what you do as well. Yeah. In that a lot of the photographs are uninhabited. There's a few of them with a few people in the water and distant figures about, but the uninhabited photograph is the surfer's, well, the uninhabited seascape is the surfer's dream, really, isn't it? It's what all surfers look for, and so that they can then go and use that space either by themselves or with a mate or something, and not with a crowd of people.
Yeah, the break with no one on
it. The crowds just don't appear in your photographs. Are
not,
you dreaming?
Not really. No, well, it's sort of really about highlighting the, you know,
the beauty of
beauty of the yeah. peninsula and, you know, just in its natural state, you know, without humans and, you know, things like that. There is a couple of shots there with human activity. I've got a shot of pines, bit of a winter surf shot, you know, just to show, you know, there's a surfer in the foreground and there's a few guys out the back, but it's more, it's still more a landscapey shot.
Yeah.
Just to show that, you know, like in winter, that's where the surfers gravitate. Big swells come in and make it a bit too wild on the ocean beaches, and they go, you know, it's a bit more protected around there. So, yeah.
Is this your first calendar?
It is.
Yeah,
yes.
Fantastic. And how will people find it? How can people get to and have a look at it?
Well, it's available at various outlets around the peninsula, down in Rye. Rye, Sorrento, Newsagents, Antipodes, Gallery, Bookshop. I've now got it in Farrell's in the main street of Mornington.
Oh, fabulous, yes. And there's one other thing I think you told me about it, is that it's on recycled paper. It's got a rather small carbon footprint, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, being a surfer and an environmentalist, you know, I wanted to reduce the impact as much as I, you know, could on the environment. So, yeah, I had it printed on 100% recycled using this waterless printing technology by a company in Melbourne. And, yeah, it's... you know...
That's fantastic. Tell me, you also have a website which people can have a look at, and there's a whole series of your work on there, but also a great way of contacting you. Can they contact you to get hold of this of your calendar as well?
Yes, if anyone has any queries about where they can get it, or if they want to get it off, you know, I can personally.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful calendar. There's some exquisite images on there, and particularly if you live down here, you'll recognise a lot of them. They're beautiful photographs. Thank you very much, Matt Mackay, for coming in and telling us about it. Go out and get one for Christmas. Or even if you don't get one for Christmas, get one for the New Year. Very,
just get
very
one for
useful.
Yourself. I've got one on the wall, as I said, but it hasn't started yet.
Thanks a lot, Matt Mackay.
Thank you.
And now it's time for John On.
And so it is.
Yes, we're going to hear about the forgery.
Art forgery or not, scurrilous behaviour, huge sums of money, various people behaving in either beautiful or terrible ways. But we'll start with a woman who, this is a great story in itself, I reckon.
Mm-hmm.
A woman in Europe who, at the age of about 22, married a man in his late 60s who was an art restorer and collector, and happened to own a painting, a 17th century German painting, that her family claimed had belonged to them during the war and had been stolen from them by the Nazis. So she more or less married the painting.
Wow.
They'd been trying to get it back unsuccessfully. She married him. About 10 years later, he died, and she had possession of the painting. So it's a different way of getting it back, isn't it?
That's a story and a half.
Well, I just thought to myself, it was stolen during the war, and it was returned some time later, and someone's getting screwed in both situations.
Well, I hope they had a good time as well.
Well, yes, I think they were happily married.
Fantastic.
But one of the things she inherited after he died was a drawing of a profile of a young woman, and it was one of the things that she put to auction, And Christie's sold it as a 18th century German drawing, possibly a copy of a Leonardo da Vinci.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold it for about $20,000. A year later, after someone had done some research on it, it reappeared in the auction circuit, and it was presented as a Leonardo da Vinci, and was offered at around $100 million. Mm. And she immediately sued Christie's for not recognising it as a da Vinci in the first place and underselling it, selling it too cheaply. So she had a go at suing them. They countered with the remark that the provenance on the painting was doubtful, which is what made them put it in the bracket that they'd put it mm-hmm. in. So the provenance being that she'd put with it that her husband, her deceased husband, had acquired the painting just after the Second World War, which placed it at least as far back as 1945.
Yeah.
It failed at auction and went into a collection somewhere, but people started looking at it. Another one appeared, and a similar size drawing,
yeah.
and claiming to be a da Vinci. In fact, is known to be a da Vinci, or is recognised as a da Vinci. And it was sold at auction for $175 million.
Right.
The guy bought it, a Russian guy, immediately sued the dealer who handled the sale into the auction house, because he had, when he found out that he'd added $50 million to what the owners wanted for the...
So, right.
And he thought that the $50 million commission was a little excessive. And perhaps it is. I don't know.
It is quite a lot, yeah, yeah. $50 million. Gee, yeah. That's more
so
than...
So this is what these people are up to, you know. The big, huge swing tag is attracting all sorts of people and all sorts of behaviour. The next thing that happens,
yes.
of course, is that this guy sticks his hand up and says, that Leonardo da Vinci drawing of the profile of the girl I made in 1978, and it's a drawing of the checkout chick down at the local supermarket.
The guy who bought it. The other one.
No, this is a man who's in jail as a forger.
Oh.
So he stuck his hand up and he said, I made that drawing. That's not a Leonardo da Vinci at all. Is it not worth $100 million? It's not worth the $20,000 that they sold it as an early German drawing. It's worth nothing, you know, is what he's saying. Coincidentally, he's just published a book on being an art forger that he's written in prison.
Oh my goodness.
So he's kind of promoting the book by suggesting that that was one of his forgeries.
Far out.
So the people who own it have said, all right, well, we'll put up $20,000 to get this guy out of prison for a little while, and we want him to show a panel of experts him making a drawing like that. We want to see him do it.
That is exciting. I'd
yeah.
love to
see him. I want to see him do it too.
Me too. Do we know what his name is?
Look, I haven't listed all the names.
Oh, let's find out though. That's really exciting. Yeah. Hey, thank you very much, John. Another scintillating John on.
Quivering with anticipation.
We right? are quivering with anticipation here at the moment, because our great elder Cliff Ellen has just walked into the room. He didn't slam the door this morning, and he's rather annoyed at me for mentioning last week that apparently he does.
It only proves I listened to last week's show.
It
well,
does.
That's true.
That, anyway.
Yeah. I was wondering whether you'd pick that up.
No.
Morning, Cliff.
Morning, John. Look, by coincidence, I've got a little 22-year-old Filipino girl
yeah.
who calls me Daddy.
Yeah.
And she wants to marry me, too.
Oh
good.
Does yeah. she want to come to Australia?
Oh, she's very tempting, but I don't think we'll have her.
You haven't convinced her that you're a man of considerable means, I suppose, Cliff?
No. I tell everybody I'm 79, not interested in marriage, just friends. And she's never asked me for money, but she says she loves me. But, of course, I don't believe that.
Where is she? Is she in the Philippines?
Yeah, Manila. Yeah. Who yeah. would go to Manila? Robbed and killed. No. I generally say, look, I'm coming next April.
Yeah.
And come April, I'll say something turned up. Work contract.
Work contract, yes. I'm busy at the radio station.
Now, I'm a big crook on the Arts Channel. Every time I turn the television on, they've got the AACTA Awards, and we all know what that is.
The
Australian Academy of Cinema and Television Arts.
Yes.
So I've watched it once, And the compares were dreadful. Where do they get these Sydney compares? It's a female and a male.
Sydney.
I remember telling you this last year, and they joke, and their jokes are terrible. They die a death. But they think they're funny. And then they go to the red carpet and they interview all the celebrities and they, you know, lap it up. And it's quite annoying.
I can't bear all that stuff.
No, well, it's dreadful. Bad. But
now, that's just reminding me, I got a message from Clint.
Clint?
Yeah. Clint's been in contact recently. We'd love to have Clint on again. Because,
best film. Is he going to Skype,
is it? Yes, because I think at the AACTA Awards, it got, I'm just quickly reading it now, the action-packed revival of Millett's 1970s franchise took out the AACTA Award for Best Film.
Correct.
Yeah.
And George Miller got Best Director.
Right. Yes.
But and what does that prove exactly?
Well, it doesn't prove anything. I mean, it's interesting because Clint came on and gave it he called it Carmageddon, do you remember? And yeah. He raved about it, said it was an extraordinary film. And then we all watched it and thought it was terrible.
Well, look, Clint's entitled to his opinion, but let me just say one or two comments.
Yep.
Firstly, I noticed in the paper and on the radio, a lot of people ring up and complain about the weather. Secondly, I went and had coffee down at Main Street before.
Mm.
I sat next to a group of girls. I've never heard such nonsense in my life. So basically, the large majority of the people are pretty silly. Now, the fact that it's got the best film doesn't mean much. It just says that the voters were astray. Sorry, Clint.
Yeah. Look, I would say, and I think I did say after I had seen it, that it is visually, it's extraordinary, you know, for effects and all of that. But honestly, as far as its narrative was concerned, it didn't make any sense at all. It was just stupid.
Well, I was happy that Anthony LaPaglia didn't get the best actor.
And I've said many times, Clint, that that kind of approval, industry or public approval on a large scale, pretty well equals mediocrity.
Yeah,
it
that's
can't
right.
do anything else.
Well, yeah, well, Clint,
it's a vote of averages.
Opinion. We've all got different opinions, but yeah, Mad Max, what Fury wrote.
Apparently, it's shaping up for the Academy Awards, isn't it?
Could be. Yeah. They're very big on this sort of thing in America. And
fast action, lots of.
But the other
stuff
one, what Kate Winslet got the best. Lead actress for The Dressmaker.
Oh, that's good. That's deserved.
That was great.
I think.
Hugo Weaving, best supporting actor.
Loved
that was
him
great.
In that
Judy
too.
Davis, outstanding.
Yes.
Yep.
Supporting actress.
Tick, tick, tick.
Yeah. Sadly, Michael Caton got the best lead actor for Last Cab to Darwin. Not my favourite actor, but good luck to the old fella, I suppose.
I just saw that film quite recently, Cliff. And I was really annoyed by its ending, I've got to tell you. I thought it was a bit of a cop-out.
Always a problem. The ending?
Yeah.
The ending, well, we talked about that, didn't we, with that lady that stood in front of a train.
Yes,
there's
yes,
no
you did.
It's sort of justification for it. So it's sort of, yeah, it does. It leaves you a bit.
It could have been much stronger. It could have had an opinion. It could have been really tough and ask those questions because it is an extraordinary circumstance and an extraordinary time that we live in when. You know, we consider ourselves to be humane and kind and very enlightened, and yet we leave our sick and elderly people in these extraordinary circumstances.
Well,
we probably shouldn't
go on
about it now.
I only saw Last Cab to Darwin because Jeremy Sims directed, and he's a friend of mine, and it was great. But look, I confess, I left before the finish.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
Basically, there's a problem once I finish the chocolate-coated ice cream.
Your attention span dwindles, does it?
I quite often smuggle in a pie and sauce too. You know.
Note to self, remember when if you go to the cinema with Cliff to have plenty of really delicious food.
Can you imagine going to the cinema and then having Cliff sit next to you with a pie and sauce?
Excuse me, I go to the Sorrento cinema and it's nearly always empty.
Yeah, I agree. It is a beautiful Wednesday morning film. Yeah,
it's a lovely place to go to. I recommend the Sorrento cinema. Just skip all the people that are floating around the street.
Yes, go in there and it's just heaven.
You want
heaven,
the television award? Peter Allen, not the boy next door. That got 5 Academy Awards, making it the most received best support awards so far in this fairly new IACTA thing. And Judy Garland. Who played Judy Garland? Sigrid Thornton.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, she got the best award.
Shaking
I'm in a mood where I don't want to criticise anyone, so I'll say no more.
Okay, then, that's very good.
She obviously is held in high regard by everybody, but not quite by me, you know.
Fair enough.
We saw Siggy Thornton in a short film recently, didn't we? The Telegram Man.
Yes, with Jack Thompson.
Yeah.
And...
it was a great little film.
It was a great little film, but you know what? I was so annoyed with Sigrid Thornton in that film, yeah. I've got to say, because she looked exquisitely beautiful, but it was utterly inappropriate for the role that she was playing.
But looking that pretty in the kitchen.
Well, she was an elderly, or not an elderly, but she was a middle-aged, an older middle-aged woman.
On a farm.
On a farm, and she did not look like one at all.
Siggy, if she's natural, is really good.
Yes, I agree.
If she pretends to be somebody else, like episode one of Sea Change, going right back.
Yeah.
She was off the planet for mine. But as a natural person, she's beautiful and really good. But
Yes, this isn't meant to be a Get Sigrid Thornton
section at all. Mention
because
of Pamela
she is a
Rabe.
Remarkable actor.
You probably didn't see that. Pamela Rabe in Wentworth, she was fantastic.
Yeah.
She got the best actress on television sort of thing. So, and Sean McAuliffe. Got Mad as Hell, best comedy.
Well, you would be very happy with that.
I'm happy with that because
that's
of my
great.
Two lines. Two lines.
Now tell us, what are you doing for the rest of the afternoon?
Well, I'll go back down the main street because I want to have a
look around. Those girls.
Shops are open.
Yeah.
No, I quite often listen to girls if I can, sit near them. I want to hear what they're saying.
Have you got a song for us today?
Well, have we played? I've never heard that song before yet.
No, we haven't. You mentioned that. We've got it for you.
Harry James on trumpet.
Is it Harry James on trumpet?
If he's not on trumpet,
Helen Forrest
throw
on vocals.
It away.
No, okay then. Very good.
Okay.
Wonderful to see you, Cliff. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, John.
Another great story, John. Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed
it,
Cliff.
Well, that's our show, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed it. We have. It seems to have whizzed past pretty quickly, doesn't it, John?
Yep, I've enjoyed it. News.
News. And I've just realised in my list of news I haven't included, as I should have, Bridget Thomas's exhibition Summer by the Sea.
We've spoken about it and we know it's on and it's worth a trip over there.
Over to Salt, Queenscliff, that's
right. It's always worth a trip to Queenscliff.
Yeah, it's beautiful over there, overseas voyage.
Yeah.
The Silverleaf Art Box has Ingrid Brooker and Vicky Randall's work in it until January the 20th. That's in Merrick's at the Silverleaf Yoga School.
And the Music Industry Music School, which should be open or opening with Cheryl Beattie and Rosebud.
That's right. The Peninsula Summer Music Festival. Go out and have a look and get it online and have a look at their program and book some tickets, because that is just an exceptional event that we have every year down here on the Mornington Peninsula.
Sally?
Yes, John?
Limbo?
Yes, Limbo.
Did we or did we not go to Limbo the other night?
We did go to Limbo the other night.
And wasn't that terrific?
That was fantastic.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it. That's on at the Spiegel Tent all summer, everybody, and really worth going to see. It was just
a lot of fun, a lot of skill, slightly dark and sinister, which is always good, and plenty of male flesh.
Yes, for all the ladies out there. Actually, there's flesh of all kinds. It's really a spectacular event, and quite a sophisticated little show, I thought. I really liked it.
Well, the size of the tent helps, I think. It's like an intimate experience.
Matt Mackay, that beautiful calendar.
Yep, tide chart calendar.
Yep, it's a great gift. Go to his website, Inner Light Photography, and have a look at that. You can buy it. You'll see it in the shops.
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous thing.
Hanging on the wall, and I've got one on the wall already, but as I said before, it hasn't started yet. I'm just sitting there looking at it, waiting for it to start.
You've got another 10 days or more, John. Yeah. To look at the front cover. Now, we also went along to see Andy Warhol, Ai Weiwei, at the NGV. That was really exciting.
Yep.
We're going to be talking to Gary Willis, who came along with us later on in the next couple of weeks, about that. It's really worth going to see.
Yep.
Gilbert and George, of course, are on at Mona.
Yes. Get in the boat and nick down there.
Yes, indeed. And, of course, the 44th Mornington Art Show is coming up. That's later on in January. It's the second largest show in Victoria, and opening night gala party is on Thursday, the 21st of January. So that's a few weeks away, but put that in your memory banks.
Sabra Lazarus.
Yes.
Sab.
Yeah, Sabra, XAA book reviewer.
Yeah, we might be able to lure her back in at some stage.
I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, she's got a painting show on in the foyer of the Mornington Library, in the exhibition space there. Get in and have a look.
Yeah. Now, another thing that we did, of course.
Haven't we been busy?
We have been so busy. We went along and saw Creatures of a Wild Wire World, which is sculptures by Tom Rippon at Crittenden's estate. Yep. There's still water at Crittenden's, it is. And it is absolutely fantastic. It's a pro-merging art venture. Go along and have a look. It is brilliant. We better go now because we're running out of time. If you've just tuned in, you've missed Asked About, Arts About, catch up with us via the podcast, which should be on the station website sometime tomorrow, or hear us repeated on Wednesday after Secrets to Health with Angela Jacobson. Thanks for listening to us. It's been great having you with us. Tune in again next week. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art,
but we know what we like.
We do know what we like.
Thanks, Brody. Do you know what you like, Brody?
Hehehehe